The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, there's good news from Bucharest, where representatives of 130 nations opened a world population conference today to talk about limiting the population of the Earth. Good news, that is, that nothing has been settled. They have made no headway. There is virtually no plan and no action amounting from it. And that politics, individual tribalism, group instincts, racism, political considerations have all but buried that conference, using it as nothing more than a sounding board for propaganda for one nation to attack another. Maybe you've seen some of the articles recently. I've got something hot off the telex that was just given me before coming to the radio studio desk from Bucharest. But first, let me show you what the newspapers were saying just this morning. They talked about how it was sponsored by the UN, a 10-day conference taking up the wide range of problems related to burgeoning world population now approaching 4 billion. Our beautiful spaceship Earth is already overpopulated. I'm not talking about people stacked 5 or 10 deep. I got a letter one time from a fellow in New England State that said, there's plenty of room up here. Well, he ought to write to people in Oregon, find out how they feel about it when the invasion from California is going on apace. People don't seem to realize that much of the Earth is inhospitable to human population, that most of it is ocean, that that which is land, only a tiny percent of the actual land surface is habitable or hospitable for human habitation. It's either too high or too low. It's too steep, or it's too dry, or it's too wet. It's either too covered by jungle and therefore stripped of topsoil, or it's absolutely ice-bound and rocky and has nothing but perhaps lichens and moss. And so therefore, only a tiny percentage of our beautiful green spaceship Earth is really habitable anyway, and there are people who know and who are intelligent enough to understand geography, agronomy, to understand that it is a matter of food and population, that it's not just the number of people you can crowd into a telephone booth. Notwithstanding letters I get from irate people who seem to think that the population explosion is some kind of a whipping boy or sensationalism or something that is wrong. Now, you may have heard the Chinese claiming that other people have already been deceived about this business of population and so on. Well, we'll take up that point in just a moment. But the point is that we have already passed that point of no return. That right now, today, the world is overpopulated by hundreds of millions of human beings. And there are certain voluntary methods we could use. And that, of course, is what the UN conference is all about. It's one more attempt at man's attempts to govern himself apart from the knowledge and the laws of God. It's one more attempt to make some sort of loose framework of world cooperation, international agency, or intranational government of some sort without any teeth, without any central voice or power, without any police force or army, and yet make it work. That's the United Nations I'm talking of. Does it work? Well, no. Yet it was the last hope for all of humankind. That's what some of the greatest leaders the world has ever produced have told us in the last 3 or 4 decades. The greatest hope for all of humankind, the last chance, the last hope, last time around. This time, we must get something to work. The problems of mankind, they've told us for years, are so enormous they can only be solved through multinational global cooperation. They've told us how the political complexities and obstacles involved in creating effective supranational institutions are enormous. But they have got to be surmounted. They've told us how existing international agencies have already served mankind well, but now we need one great body that is finally going to solve all of these problems. Environment, health, pollution, overpopulation, crime. Study all of these problems and find solutions to them. Humanity needs a world order, they said. Humanity needs world government, they said. We will have world government or we will not survive, they said. This is mankind's last chance, last hope for world peace. All the way from the Tower of Babel, to the Greco-Macedonian Empire, to the Roman Empire, to the Habsburgs and the Frankish Kingdom. all the way to the League of Nations with its death knell built into it by a combination of stripping away the German East African colonies and the creation of the Danzig Corridor, which directly led toward some of the foam-flecked spittle, flecked invective that Hitler poured out upon the mobs to create the irritation in the German populace about the mistreatment and the unresolved problems left hanging that weren't really settled following World War I, and so man's more modern attempt at some kind of a supranational league of nations, they called it, to bring about equitable settlements of disputes between countries, failed, like all before it had failed. But the United Nations, that was going to be different. We had grown up. We were a jet space age now. Now we had the atom bomb. Now we were a world where it was acknowledged science seems ready as its last gift to bequeath upon us the ability to exterminate ourselves. And so instead of rushing lemming-like over the cliff because there are too many of us, or instead of blasting all of humankind off the face of the earth in a wild, frenzied, doomsday, unbelievable war in which there could be no winners, only losers, we decided we needed a United Nations. And they told us it was our last hope. Now, I don't know what you think about the United Nations as to how well it is working, but I'll tell you what I think. I think it's an abysmal failure, is what I think. I think it's a resounding, dull, hollow thud of a flop, is what I think. No, I'm not saying that there haven't been certain minor and seemingly short-range and inconsequential successes, because there have been. That would be a totally unfair view to say that the publication of literature, certain health and educational programs, certain attempts to staff or to put the manpower in demilitarized zones or to create buffer zones between antagonists during ceasefires or things of this nature have not been laudatory enough, because they have been. Now, I'm talking about the great goals of the United Nations. I'm talking about dealing effectively with the environment, with pollution and population, with preventing wars, when the avowed purposes, of course, with stopping those which might get started, policing the world. You remember how the Korean War, we tend in the United States to think of that as the war between the United States and Communist China and the North Koreans, and we're quite correct in thinking so, although they did bill it as a police action by the United Nations. The United States took, of course, 90-some percent or more of all the costs, the loss in materiel and manpower, but it was a police action by the United Nations. Well, this current conference was called at its opening by UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim as one of the most important conferences the United Nations has ever organized. He said, and I quote his words, "I hope this conference will make an important contribution to the solution of the problem of the discrepancy of the growing population all over the world and the growing food shortage," he said. Now let me tell you what's happening. This telex just came into our own telex machine from Bucharest, where our own Plain Truth magazine correspondent is attending that conference, Chris Carpenter. Chris said, "Here's the latest on United Nations World Population Conference. The conference is the usual measure of UN solidarity and unity. Political considerations have delayed agreement on World Population Plan of Action. Chinese have taken every opportunity to attack the Russians. Chinese have accused the Russians of deceiving the peoples of the world. 1985 family planning target has been rejected. Please amend my article accordingly." He has an article coming up on that date, and the fact that it has been rejected because his earlier statement written and filed with us before his departure on the proposed family planning program date or target date for 1985 has now been abandoned. After the vote, he said in the telex, "Miss Julia Henderson, Secretary General of the International Planned Parenthood Federation, expressed dismay that the decision removed all sense of urgency from the provision of family planning services. It virtually amounts to no plan, no action," she said. An unofficial population tribunal paralleling the official conference has been set up, he said, and abortion has been the prime issue. He went on to show how Dr. Andre Heiligers of the Kennedy Institute, who was a Roman Catholic, said he did not believe in discussing abortion only in terms of the mother but never of the fetus, Dr. Hellinger's statement or standpoint was that the abortion issue was ethical, not medical. He personally accepted the biological definition that life started at conception and that no amount of euphemism could eliminate the fact that abortion was taking a life. To discuss abortion only in such terms, he said, is like discussing slavery only in terms of the owner, but never of the slave. And then, as Chris said in the telex, to conclude in a demographic symposium this morning, the point was made that the next 10 years would be decisive. It might well be that the present decline in the death rate would be reversed with famines, droughts, the shortfall in food production, and a possible economic depression acting as brakes on burgeoning population growth. The world could be faced with very different prospects from those facing it at the present. That report came into our Pasadena radio studio moments before this broadcast from Chris Carpenter, who was on the spot in Bucharest at the United Nations conference on the proposition of setting population limits of goals of doing so. Now, that report shows there is no solidarity, that nothing is going to come out of the meeting whatsoever, that the hopeful signs of some kind of family planning adopted by all member nations of the United Nations and put into effect by 1985, isn't that an unbelievable target date? Probably too late by then anyway. And even that has now been abandoned. Well, we read, too, how Brazil had opposed any global target limits for population, saying that there was no indication that Earth's resources were being threatened by the overpopulation of the world. Now, that's interesting to me. I don't know which individual. Well, there's Miguel Alvaro de Almeida, who is a Brazilian who addressed that session of the World Population Conference and spoke for Brazil, and where he got his information, I don't know. But maybe the poor man needs to be educated. Maybe he needs to be told about the exact number of acres there are in production, the number of acres there could be in production. Maybe he needs to read a little more from agriculturalists and those who can tell him even a little more about his own Mato Grosso or the Amazon jungle of Brazil and what is true about rainforests, of the unbelievable, impenetrable problem that is. And unless you have read articles about the problems of people, I'm talking about people with great, big, heavy earth movers and bulldozers and some of the biggest equipment that Letourneau or anybody else has ever put out, or Clark or any of the big equipment companies, and the almost incredible, unbelievable difficulties of even building roads through that impenetrable area, where nature is on a rampage almost continuously. You perhaps ought to read William and Paul Paddock's book about famine, 1975, America's Decision, Who Will Survive, which discusses in one segment the nice, comfortable argument of those in overstuffed, overfed America, sitting with stomachs full, comfortably expecting their next meal, knowing precisely where it's coming from, who can afford to argue about the time when we will farm the seas, or we will farm the deserts, or we will farm the mountaintops, or we will farm the Amazon jungles. Each of these cherished after the second cocktail argument of people who like to pretend they know what they're talking about are carefully disintegrated by the authors of that book in a technical and scientific manner. They explode these myths and show that those are clever catchphrases that are fallen back upon as cherished cliches by people who like to pretend they know something about the world situation and who do not. It's rather surprising then to find that one of the nations which is already incredibly overpopulated, with a population explosion of its own, with some of the most squalid, unbelievable situations in its cities that you can imagine, and I'm talking about Brazil, I'm talking about Sao Paulo, I'm talking about Rio de Janeiro, and I have been there. Not once, but several times. I'm talking about cities with ramshackle, squalid huts of tin and tar paper that every time a heavy rain comes, and that's fairly often, come tumbling down and people drown and people are dying in mudslides and the like. I'm talking about one of the most hideous parts of the world when you get off the streets of Copacabana. And for, you know, as far as that's concerned, I am never ceaseful of being amazed at people who like to glamorize a place like Rio de Janeiro. or for that matter, Paris, or for that matter, London, or Rome, or New York. I'm just never ceasing to be amazed. I mean, I have walked up and down the length and breadth of Rio de Janeiro. I've never seen a filthier beach in my life than Copacabana. Some of the most incredibly decrepit, old, ugly, stuffy hotels on the face of the earth line that beach. It's a hideous place to be. You can walk along that beach or the sidewalk that you saw in little Jose Carioca so many years ago. If you're over 40 like I am, you remember some of the Disney cartoons that glamorized it with some of the gals dancing along with a whole fruit salad on their heads for a hat. That's all well and good. American movies can make it look real glamorous. I remember so well commenting in a motion picture so many years ago, people were poling grandly down the Grand Canal, maybe somewhere in a European city, or they were, you know, steamrolling along in their beautiful automobile, managing a tight turn through some little town in the Southern Riviera, or they were bombing around the statues in the shadow of the Arch of Triumph in Paris, or maybe they were jet-setting it down to Rome. And having been many times to all of these cities, and having seen the squalid filth and the overcrowded conditions, having seen the splattered public statues and buildings, the filth, the soot, and the grime, the people who hate Americans and have their hand out, the wildly screaming, shouting cacophony of sound as tens of thousands of taxi drivers battle it out in these unbelievable traffic jams, leaning halfway out of their cars, screaming invective at one another, and seeing it the way it really is, looking at the Grand Canal of Venice, and seeing not just the beauty that is painted by a motion picture photographer, but the squalid, fetid, filthy flotsam and jetsam flying down and swirling around in that unbelievable, massive, open sewer that is called a canal. You see, I have a friend that dared to go water skiing and got a skin disease and came down with a terrible flu just from the spray, because he wanted to say he'd water skied out there in the estuary somewhere near the Grand Canal. Well, when you look at the reality, and here's Brazil, unexpectedly, throwing a monkey wrench into the machinery of trying to limit population growth. Here is Brazil, one of the nations of the earth that has terrible, squalid, overcrowded, unbelievable problems in its big cities, that needs desperately some kind of a population governor of some type, and yet the government says Brazil wants to continue its policies to increase its population in order to develop its vast hinterland. Oh, ghastly. It shows me how people in government, you know, I mean, I've had plenty to say about our own government. I'd like to take a crack at the Brazilian government for a moment. Can be so out of touch with reality, they don't even face what they see around them in their own streets. It isn't an increase in population they need, it's the education of the present population. In the first place, most of those people that live in the outback come swarming into the cities, and they've got a population explosion in the sense of a massive migration. And they, like some of the big cities in India, have their street people. They've got hundreds of thousands of people living in those cities that they could no more send out with a mattock or an adze or a hoe or a rake into that outback unless they did it by a military rule at the point of a bayonet. The only way they're going to get those people out there into the hinterland to develop it is by a combination of education, of the equipment, the industrial base, transportation, the appropriate fossil fuels. They're going to have to carve out of that wilderness dozens of bases from which to operate, and they're going to need skilled technicians and equipment operators. They're going to need people who understand things like loaders and graders and front-end loaders and tractors and caterpillars and aircraft and trains and trucks. They're not going just because they populate and reject theories of explosive population growth exhausting the Earth's resources to solve their problems. Statements like that are so incredible. But that's government. It not only then shows the unbelievable, stifling ignorance that sometimes grips individual governments, but it also shows the unbelievable, stifling inability of a supranational governmental organization of states. It is not really a body that governs, but it's a kind of a loose-knit complex political structure called the United Nations and has utter inability to do anything, to move, to get anything done. So again, you've got to say, if you look back to the days when they made all these statements at the very organizational meetings, the foundational meetings of the United Nations, this is mankind's last chance. Well, we can say we've had our last chance. Our last chance wasn't good enough. So what next? Because the United Nations has failed. Many delegates to that conference over there said privately that differing views on the nature of the problem and its remedy would prevent any real consensus, and they were right, as our own reporter on the spot posted his telex with us moments before I came on the air. As one person said in that 23-page draft about worldwide action, and I quote, "It's so full of holes you could drive a fleet of double-decker buses through it," end of quote. So that is the kind of government you can expect if you're looking toward any world form of government to solve our problem. Last time I was showing how man, from time immemorial, has tried to effect world government, has tried to solve the problems of global planning. But now today, where we live in a world of instant communication, where you can find out in a matter of hours what took place in India or Vietnam or Pakistan, and where they in Indonesia or the Philippines can find out what took place in Brazil or Argentina, or where people in the United States hear instantly what went on over in Japan and vice versa. Now, today, in a world of nuclear arms, of overkill, more than enough by far to blast world after world after world totally out of existence, now today, in a world already overpopulated, which cannot feed, house, educate, and care for its population that is doubling every 30 years. And you have fools standing on soapboxes that say there is no such thing as a population explosion today. Half of the people in the world are hungry, illiterate, and diseased. Yet, there's no way to stop the trend. Or is there? Well, you know, there are voluntary methods. There is growing worldwide acceptance of abortion, for example, and the fights among religionists and sociologists and governments are well known about birth control, IUDs, the pill, abortion, and so on. Leave it to them to fight it and squabble over it. The point is that there are certain voluntary methods of family planning. But there are also, limited, perhaps, in one sense of the word, by time and circumstance, by space, by weather, by populations, as they tend to be concentrated in certain areas of the earth and a little able to support them, such as India, the subcontinent there, Indonesia, the island of Timor, and Java, some of the most heavily populated in the world is the island of Java, with a population density perhaps heavier even than that of India, and mountain ranges and oceans and rivers and things of this nature tend to isolate populations in certain areas. And so the poor people are the ones who want more and more babies, more and more people. The poor nations want more and more population. And so you find the political and the tribal, and the group instinct, and the racial instinct of developing our country. So we announce we will not adopt any population curbs of any type. Well, it was an expedient statement to make. The man may have believed the statement. I wouldn't for any minute say he didn't believe what he said. But the point is, lurking over the horizon, and actually already visible now, are involuntary methods our world has of imposing its own limits upon population. And those are unpleasant. Those are famine, already taking its toll, already running rampant in Africa. People are malnourished and living at a starvation level throughout an entire belt of the world that stretches all the way from the Philippines, throughout Indonesia, New Guinea, parts of Australia, all the way up through southeastern Asia, into India, Pakistan, across the entire middle section of Africa, and many other sections of Africa as well, through much of the Arab countries, even into some areas of Eastern Europe, in many areas, believe it or not, even in the United States of America, where there are people who are malnourished, undernourished, poorly nourished, or have unbalanced diets that are suffering from protein malnourishment, which can bring about all sorts of diseases. And you find people in especially Central and South America, in the West Indies or the Caribbean islands, the island of Haiti, for example, where about 93% of the population has intestinal parasites. Central and South America, ill-fed, ill-housed, uneducated, illiterate, and a population doubling every 30 years, and yet you still have people telling you there is no problem. Well, let me tell you, there is a problem. And our world could be likened to a spaceship. Spaceship Earth, and we're on a journey. We got a captain up there, or have we? We've got a commander, have we? We got a trained crew, have we? We know where we're going. We got a flight plan. We know where we're headed. No, not on our spaceship. Our spaceship is on a journey. Every night when you go to sleep, you're probably unaware of the fact that as the world continually rotates, you have moved about 8,000 miles when you wake up from where you were in relation to the rest of the planets. You're taking a trip. You're on a journey. You're moving all the time. Now, if you took a look at the dope sheet they handed over the back of the seat in front of you on the flight we're on, you would find out that we are in a spaceship in flight, but we don't have anybody up there in the cockpit. You'd find out that there isn't any trained crew. You'd find out there isn't even any flight plan. You'd find out that we possess strictly limited life support systems. We've got just so much life left in the batteries. We've got so much electrical power being generated. We've got limited material resources, just so much food and so much capacity for more. You take a look at the inventory sheet, you'd find out that we're carrying on this spaceship of ours 4 billion passengers, but most all of those, almost all of them are back in the third class section. Undernourished, deprived, underprivileged, starving. You'd also find out that a tiny, tiny percentage of about 500 million first-class passengers sitting up there in the smoking section, eating cocktails and caviar and drinking martinis, are overstuffed and overfed, and they pretend otherwise, and they like to make speeches about how the world is in good shape and there's no problem. In the meantime, they're converting many of the non-renewable resources that ought to be equally distributed among all those other folks back in the third-class section into a lot of trivia and poisonous junk. And toys with which they poison, befoul, and pollute their first-class section, and that spills over into the third-class section, and everybody suffers and says, what in the world are they smoking up there? Smells like it was lying out in the rain. Yeah, we're on a spaceship, but there's no commander, and no trained crew, and no flight plan. And we're having an emergency in space. And there are people that are too ignorant to understand. Well, you don't need to be ignorant of world conditions and of where we are and where we're headed and what the outcome is going to be. If your name is on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine, you will get the kind of articles that I'm talking to you about that are filed from on the spot as these things are happening that go behind and underneath the news and tell you what it means. And also the current booklet, Is This the End Time? I've been announcing this booklet about whether or not we are living in a time of the end as Jesus Christ of Nazareth prophesied in Matthew 24, or whether you can just say we've always lived in times like this. This booklet, Is This the End Time? And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost. But tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.